And now, I'd like to show my love by making for you a Quebec pizza.
What's that?
Pop-Tart with the ketchup. She's good.
Daniel Parmack, San Antonio, Texas.
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to 88.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Ba-da-da-da-da.
It's showtime.
This is Old School at the Movies, episode 139 for February 2nd, 2016. Old School at the Movies is brought to you by the brand new TrendingTopicsNetwork.com. Check out some great shows like Anything Goes, NFL Easy Picks, and anything else Heavyset's doing. Welcome back to Old School at the Movies, your one-stop shop for all your movie-related news. I'm your host, Mr. Old School. Before I get to the panel this week, let's get into the contact information. OldSchoolMovies.net is the site where you can listen, download, and subscribe to the podcast. If you want to get in touch with us directly, don't be shy. OldSchoolMovies2@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at OldMovies.net. That's OldMovies, D-O-T-net, hashtag O-S-A-T-M. So without further ado, let's get into our panel for this week. Our American hero, Mr. Heavyset.
If there's a need for a rescue mission, when the world is threatened, when the world needs help, it calls on America. So I know who's asked to kick.
I'm really hoping that in 1 year's time, we're not talking about having to switch Obama sound clips to Trump sound clips.
Yeah, you're fired. He's a loser. You're fired.
We're gonna put up a wall in Canada because we don't want you Canadians coming over spending your depreciated money.
Yeah, exactly. And on the call this week, coming back from a small hiatus, we've got Cart.
Dude, where's my car? Where's your car, dude?
That car is gone. And if Trump does get elected, I think we'll actually build the wall so we could keep all the cool shit in Canada like they did in South Park.
There you go. But
the problem will be is that we'll also elect a Trump-like figure and not want to live in Canada anymore. And we'll just all have to move to Mexico.
What? I don't get carb logic.
You gotta watch South Park from this season when the new Canadian Prime Minister is actually like a Trump knockoff, and all the Canadians move to the States.
Okay.
Because of the new crazy president.
There you go. Okay, let's get right into it. This week is Die Hard.
It's Christmas Eve in L.A.
California.
Is Daddy coming home soon?
Well, we'll see what Santa and Mommy can do, okay?
A New York cop, John McLean, has come to see his wife.
I missed you.
Instead, he's going to have to save her.
Sit down.
Within this skyscraper high above the city, 12 terrorists have declared war.
They're about to be taught a lesson in the real use of power.
They're as brilliant.
Because I am interested in the $640 million in your vault.
As they are ruthless.
But I'm telling you, you're just going to have to kill me.
Okay. We do it the hard way.
Now, the last thing McLean wants...
Think, damn it, think!
...is to be a hero.
Where's Holly?
Hey, Tucker!
Where?
But he doesn't have a choice.
What does he think he's doing?
Job.
They have already killed one hostage.
This channel is reserved for emergency calls only.
Inside? Who is he? Who are you then?
You are most troublesome for a security guard.
Sorry, wrong guess, huh? Would you like to go for double jeopardy?
Do anything you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy.
Yippee-ki-yay, mother.
You just destroyed a building. Charge of this situation.
Well, I got some bad news for you. From up here, it doesn't look like you're in charge of Jack.
He is alone, he's tired, and he hasn't seen Disney SWAT from anybody down here.
Hey, pal, how you feeling?
With all things being equal, I'd rather be in Philadelphia.
I want blood, and you have it.
Only John can drive somebody that crazy.
He's an easy guy to like.
Come out to the coast. We'll get together. Have a few laughs.
And a hard man to kill. Willis. Die Hard.
Got invited to the Christmas party by mistake. Who knew?
Die Hard's a 1988 American action film directed by John McTiernan and written by Stephen E. D'Souza and Jeb Stuart. It follows off-duty New York City Police Department officer John McClane, played by Bruce Willis, as he takes on a group of highly organized criminals led by Hans Gruber, played by Alan Rickman, who perform a heist at a Los Angeles skyscraper under the guise of a terrorist attack using hostages, including McClane's wife, Holly, played by Bonnie Bedelia, to keep the police at bay. It is based on Roderick Thorpe's 1979 novel Nothing Lasts Forever. The sequel to 1966 is The Detective, which was adapted into a 1968 film of the same name that starred Frank Sinatra. Fox was contractually obligated to offer Sinatra the lead role in Die Hard, but he turned it down. Yeah, I mean, what age was he at that point? I don't know if that would have worked. The studio then pitched the film to Schwarzenegger as a sequel to 85 action film Commando. He turned it down, as did a host of the era's action stars, and the studio finally reluctantly gave it to Willis, then known primarily as a comedic television actor. Made for $28 million, Die Hard grossed over $140 million theatrically worldwide and was given a positive reception from critics. The film turned Willis into an action star, became a metronym for an action film in which a lone hero fights overwhelming odds, and now widely considered one of the greatest action movies ever made. The film's success spawned the Die Hard franchise, which includes four sequels, video games, and a comic book. Just to start off, how the fuck would it have worked with Sinatra? Like, how old was Sinatra at the time?
Movie's 88? Holy shit. Hold on. He was born in 1915. He would have been...
He would have been 73.
73.
How the fuck is Sinatra going to do?
Yeah, especially Sinatra. Like, he's no Chuck Norris. I mean, like, Chuck Norris still looks pretty damn good for a guy in his 70s. But Sinatra, it's... No, I don't... I can't even imagine. I mean, I'm assuming if we read the book, maybe it's not as, like, terrorist and action-filled, the book, maybe.
Yeah, maybe they modified it a bit.
Adapted for screenplay. So.
Apparently, Schwarzenegger turned it down. A bunch of people turned. I'm kind of curious why everybody turned it down. It seems like a great typical action movie for everybody.
No idea, man.
Whatever reason, Bruce Willis gets the nod, and this really changes his career. You know, it gives him the opportunity to do an action movie. And now, all Willis is known as is an action star.
Yeah. This launched his action career for sure. There's no question about it. He was on Moonlighting in, you know, more of a, like they said, more of a comedic role beforehand. So
there you go.
Was the first precursor to John Cena.
Super Cena, yeah. Okay, let's start off. So the movie starts off as Bruce Willis is on a plane. So you get to see young Bruce Willis. You get some sexual tension between him and the stewardess. And I don't know about you guys, but young Bruce Willis reminds me of like a Mel Gibson.
What freaked me out is, like, he had his gun on him on the plane.
Gotta love the 80s, eh? It's just whatever.
He's just like, oh, I'm a cop. I'm like, last time I checked, I'm pretty sure cops aren't allowed to conceal and carry on an airplane, even in the 80s, let alone ever since the 2000s.
So. Yeah. So his wife works at the Nakatomi Corporation, which sounds extremely fake.
Well, the Nakatomi Tower was actually Fox's headquarters at the time while it was being built. So that was, and they actually charged themselves rent.
Really?
To film. Yeah. One of the facts there on Uproxx, the Nakatomi Tower that's overtaken by the terrorists is actually 20th Century Fox's headquarters. One would think that filming in your own office would be a smart way to trim the budget. Then again, this is Hollywood and we're talking about an industry that spent money to make Jack and Jill. The studio charged themselves rent to film there.
Well, I guess it makes sense for their bottom line. They can write it off.
Yeah, it's a write-off.
Okay, so they're at an office party. His wife's at an office party for the Nakatomi Corporation. She's one of the head salespeople. Did a pregnant woman just say she's going to go for drinks?
She did.
In the 80s.
She asked if the kid was ready for its first drink, and I believe Holly's response was the kid's about ready to become the bartender.
Yeah, I don't know if that would fly today too much. And all smoking in the movie, too. Willis is smoking big time. Stereotypical Mexican maid with a horrible accent, Carp.
Yep. Can't disagree with you on that. So,
like, there's a lot of Mexicans you can hire in Hollywood, I'm sure. And maybe even an actual maid at that point. It was fucking, wasn't too impressed there. So Bruce Willis gets brought to the venue in a limo. He gets brought by Nakatomi himself while he pays for the limo. And in the limo, Carps, there's technological wonders as a car phone and a VHS player.
Well, yeah. I mean, 1988.
Hold on. Tape deck, too.
Yeah.
And a CB.
Yep.
A CB radio, yeah.
Some advanced shit for the 80s, man. Late 80s.
The CB radio is convenient. We'll learn later on. Why is he sitting in the front seat, though, guys? What's with that?
I think he says something. I don't remember what he said. I think he said it makes him more comfortable. He doesn't feel like he, you know, should be riding the back seat, something like that.
He's a man of the people.
Well, with him being a cop, you know, you don't want to be in the back seat.
Oh, yeah. Huh. There you go. Jotted down a note for smoking, and that all of them are fucking smoking. Yeah, so Carb, we were mentioning during the movie, apparently you got $5 million for this role?
Yeah, then unheard of, $5 million. And I, like I was saying, he was only known for moonlighting at the time. So that's huge.
Do you think they were just because so many people turned it down, they just didn't want to lose him too and said, fuck it, and just threw some big money at
him? Maybe. I mean, I know he was recording both at the same time where he was recording Moonlighting during the day and Die Hard at night because you could tell it's all pretty much the entire movie except for the plane and the limo, initial limo scene, are all at night.
So then Willis gets out of the limo. He tells the driver he doesn't know if he's going to stay there, so if he can hang around for a little bit. Or I think the driver offered to hang around for a little bit while Willis kind of figured it out. So then he goes into the building, and the guy asks him to press a touchscreen, which is the most like useless fucking thing in the world because he just literally chose any random name, pressed it, and went in. There was no like verification of identity or... Nobody knows. So he could have literally just picked anybody, gone in the building and fucking done whatever if he wanted to. And it was like I know it's the 80s, but he just like pressed like one button. And I thought it was a useless attempt at making it look high tech. Okay, no comments there.
I mean, it's a modern, like it's the modern Nakatomi Tower, right? From what you could see later on, it looks like they're, you know, industry heads of development of the world at the time. So maybe, you know, you want to go as high tech as possible and blow as much money as you can on your big old tower.
So you were mentioning too in passing during this time that apparently Willis was born in Germany. It's kind of ironic that he was taken on German terrorists.
Yeah, he was born in 1955 in Western Germany. This is when, you know, Germany was still to the millennials who don't understand how Germany was two separate countries at one point. There was actually this big old wall in between, and there was an East and West Germany at the time. And born in West Germany, Eider Oberstein, West Germany. His actual real name is Walter Willis.
Walter Willis. Yeah. Bruce sounds a bit better. So he arrives at the party. Apparently, they only play one song the entire fucking time, which is Ode to Joy. It's like they either had no budget for music or just said, okay, we're going to make sure we play Ode to Joy the entire fucking movie.
Christmas in Hollis, man, when he's in the limo.
Okay, no, but I mean at the venue, at the Nakatomi venue, the only fucking thing they played was the Fifth Symphony. That's it. The entire, like, they were there for 2 hours or whatever. That's all they were listening to.
Well, during the party, yeah, it was just the Fifth Symphony. And at one point, Hans Gruber actually hums it as well.
Yeah, but, like, you see multiple cuts back to the party.
Yep.
And Fifth Symphony is still fucking playing. Like, I can't, you can't play another song.
It's just all Ode to Joy.
And like you said, what kind of office is a fucking waterfall in the middle of it?
Like I said, big expensive tower. Probably the architect's like, oh, here's my, you know, giant erection in downtown LA. And this is what my boner would look like in real life as a building. I'm sure that's what it had to be. Because it was actually Fox's office. So I'm wondering if they legit had that in that building in downtown LA.
Okay. Then we get introduced to the Coke sniffer and the Japanese guy, Nakatomi. But the Coke sniffer right away gets introduced as a shady character. He looks like a fucking, like a shyster.
Typical salesman in the 80s, you know, coked out and skeevy looking, so morals.
And apparently he's got a thing for...
He's hitting on a Holly Gennaro, not Holly McClain, but Gennaro, so...
Yeah, and one thing I found kind of weird was that they cast somebody who's... we checked, there's like 15 years older than Willis. Is
12 years older at the time.
So she was 47 and he was 35. And they, like, I usually, you don't see that. I think Top Gun,
she was older, but she was casted as being older. She's like a teacher or whatever. Makes sense. In this thing, like, why would Willis date somebody 12? You would figure it always would be younger.
For sure.
So that very much went against the kind of stereotype.
That's, well, I mean, like we were saying, though, all these other people were offered the roles at the time. How do we know that her role was offered to her last minute as well? Like, we don't know that. I mean, I don't even know who this chick was outside of her being Holly Gennaro in the Die Hard movies.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Maybe they didn't replace her. She was originally casted, and they were looking for an older guy, like Schwarzenegger. Like Sinatra. Well, it's Sinatra, yeah. No, but I'm pretty sure they figured Sinatra would say no. He's fucking 70 at the time. But, like, Schwarzenegger is 10 years older. So I think that kind of makes sense, and I guess they didn't replace her as the wife as they would do normally. Like, they would either put the same age or younger. So jumping on the call, we've got Mr. CT himself. Will, how you doing?
Right, I'm glad to be here. Thanks.
Because you just joined in. We're at the point where they've introduced. He's at the party at Nakatomi Towers, and he's just met the Coke Sniffer douchebag. Kind of guy who's interested in.
What I love is how this is like a typical 80s film. You wouldn't have that today, but like in the 80s, like cocaine is cool, guys. Like this is, it's all part of the party. Let's just have some cocaine. Also, isn't that right before he catches two people having random sex?
Well, they're like in the process of.
Oh, they're in the process of. Yeah.
But they only get pulled apart when you finally get introduced to Hans.
Okay. All right. But yeah, it's because it's as if what I like is how he's a New York cop, and he says how like this LA is such a weird place where like people at the airport, you know, come to each other's arms, and people have like sex in the office, and there's like coke everywhere. It's funny how they make LA seem more of a Sin City type place in that context in the 80s.
Yeah, man, big time. John McClane's life. Yeah, I mentioned the wife looks way older. 20 minutes in, Ode to Joy still playing. What the fuck? Can't they get any music rights?
I don't think they care. Like, you know what? I like how this is just shows that it wasn't part of, you know, what the movie was about. They didn't care. Ode to Joy, go ahead. But you know what's funny? You say that. I never, for once, noticed that they were always playing Ode to Joy. I just rewatched it. I didn't catch it. They were always playing
Ode to Joy. It's pretty much when, like, they're at the office party at any point, even when Hans and the terrorists are there, it's always playing Ode to Joy.
But isn't it amazing how I didn't notice? Like, the film is so good that I didn't catch this part that I guess should have annoyed me. I just didn't.
We need to pay attention more. Okay, so then the villains get introduced, and I didn't realize that when they were going into the building, that it was the same building at first. I thought it might have been like a bank or something. So that it took me a minute, but then I realized they're going into the same building that they're all in. And this black guy hacker, I'm like, fuck, I recognize this guy from somewhere.
Really? From where? Where'd you get him?
Walker, Texas Ranger.
Who is he in that?
He's Chuck Norris's buddy.
Yeah, he's his partner.
Yep.
Sidekick. That took me towards the end of the movie. I was like, oh, fuck. Can't remember his
took
name.
Me a little while, actually. Yeah, it took me a little while. And I'm like, God,
by the way, I love that guy's typing skills. It's like, it's clearly that the computer is not on. It's clearly just him, like, typing away doing random shit. It's very funny.
We got the first appearance of Hans Gruber. I'm like, oh, fuck, Alan Rickman's Hans Gruber. That's kind of cool.
Also, by the way, it's Alan Rickman's first movie role.
Oh,
yes,
really?
He was 40. That's a freaking late bloomer, man. But yeah, it's his first movie role. Way to freaking start with a bang. Yeah.
And it's at that point I realized I've never seen this movie before.
Yeah, when you said that to me when we were watching it, I was like, are you serious? I can't. Like,
wait, what?
I didn't believe you.
I've never seen Die Hard.
From when? Like, from when you just watched it now for this podcast?
Ever.
He had never seen it up till January.
So what did you think it was before? When we mentioned Die Hard, you said, yeah, Die Hard. What did you think you saw? Die Hard 2?
Or yeah, something like I always thought I saw it.
Huh.
I must have seen it at some point, either on TV or something. And I'm watching it. I'm like, I don't know this movie. I haven't seen it before.
Well, did you like it?
Well, I'll tell you after the end of the movie. Okay, 30 minutes in, Ode to Joy again.
I mean, it's pretty much all they played during that movie.
Nazi guy is like no selling electrical wires and fucking sawing them off while the other guy almost gets electrocuted. Like, you got the one guy's taking his time, the one Nazi guy, taking his time trying to wait. The other guy's like, well, fuck brothers. This, and just, like, takes a chainsaw. Oh, is it brother?
Yeah, that's why they're messing. He's messing with him. They're that's why the older brother's messing with the younger brother.
That point, they go upstairs. The terrorists come, the robbers trying to be terrorists come in.
Well, no, at this point, terrorists is fine to say, right? Because that's what they're trying to pull off, right? They're the terrorists.
There you go. So a terrorist come in and we see some 80s boobs.
By the way, something fun is that do you see how ethnically diverse the terrorists are? I like how there's like an Asian dude, black dude.
Yeah, black dude.
And there's
dude,
like a freaking Aryan race type dude. It's very nice.
Yeah, the Germans they had were straight up Aryan.
Yeah.
Like blonde hair, blue eyes, fucking leaders of the Nazi party type Germans.
But I do love how it's like no exclusion. It's like everybody is fine. Everybody's fair game. We're like culturally diverse terrorists. Let's do this.
Yeah, well, there it was the early bringing on of being PC, so that's good.
PC, but then even with the boobs, how PC is that?
Yeah, well, yeah, there you go.
The boobs are barely there.
Yeah, it's also you know what's not true? Because then you see boobs later on too, right? When he sees a poster.
Yeah, on the poster and stuff, but like, to me, that would be an 80s work zone of a construction area. For sure there'd be a guy putting up posters of titties everywhere. So.
Yeah, big time.
Then we got the late 80s phone, so they cut the phones in the whole building. And I'm like, if this was set like 30 years later, the movie would be over in 20 minutes.
Because yeah, someone has a Willis cell phone. And just...
That's it. Willis gets on his cell phone. And he's like, yeah, there's a bunch of terrorists come down. It'd be over.
But here's the thing. I mean, because he still has no shoes on at this point, right? So what if at the time, you know, the terrorists come in and he grabs his gun, doesn't grab his cell phone at the time? What if his cell phone was with his shoes? Did you ever think of that?
Yeah, hard, but I mean, when somebody else has a phone.
Like a phone in the 90s were the size of bricks, and for sure the terrorists or the kidnappers or whatever would grab everybody's cell phones.
Yeah, but you said 30 years
later.
Well,
that's what
I'm
saying, like, yeah, there you go. You know, but of course it's set in the 80s, so it makes sense, but yeah.
No, but yeah, if it was done today, Hans Gruber would be like, have to have everybody take out the cell phone.
Or put a jammer, maybe out of some kind of cell phone jammer.
Yeah.
I found Rickman's accent was kind of shit, though.
But he's trying... Okay, because you're saying it's the German accent, right?
Yeah, the German accent was a little rough.
Yeah, he's German.
No, but it doesn't matter, but it's not... I'll tell you why I find that's okay, because it's still a German guy who learned English. Like, if you learned English... depends on who you learned English from, you understand?
No, but the thing is, he's got his fucking Aryan race buddies, and they're all like, schnell, schnell, and then he's like, he's talking to kind of like a British... German thing.
I'll tell you why, though. Kind of like, seen this. It's if when a German guy learns English in Britain, he will inherently get some of the British accent.
You're fucking stretching.
No, it's
there.
True.
That's a stretch.
I mean, look, if he had education in England, yeah, he'd sound like that. He would.
I don't know what he was trying to. He put some kind of.
Look, okay, you say that. I think his American accent is shit.
Well, yeah. Well, you might be jumping.
Okay, sorry. We'll get there.
So then they find a Japanese CEO and they force him to give him the bonds. And he's like, I'm not doing it. You'll just have to kill me. So he's like, okay. And it blows him away. That's fucking awesome.
I love
awesome.
That. I love the black guy's like, oh, fuck that. More work for me. He's like, too bad.
If you watch that scene closely, they have it on the Uproxx thing. Rickman, every time he shot, he would flinch. And no matter how many takes it took, he could not stop flinching.
Wait. So when he would shoot, there was actually a sound effect within the
when he blows gun? Away Nakatomi's brains or Takashi's brains. If you watch really slow, you see Rickman flinch.
Okay, yeah, but my question is: so the sound is not post?
The sound. The sound for that case, I'm assuming, was post. But most of the sound, the gunshots, were extra loud blanks.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't know that at all.
That's why Bruce Willis is actually deaf in one ear in real life.
I didn't
because of Die Hard.
Die Hard 1.
Yep.
I didn't know this. That's insane.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Did he get compensation now for that?
Okay, this is exactly what happened during the scene where McClane kills a terrorist by shooting him through the table. Extra loud blanks were used in the film to achieve the hyper-realism that director John McTiernan wanted. The proximity of the gun to Willis's ear caused permanent damage to his hearing.
So he's diehard of hearing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but at that point, remember some other guy got an STD doing a film or something, he got compensation? So did Willis get compensation
for
that?
I have no idea. I can check online.
He got to keep the car phone and the limo.
By the way, that STD story is pretty good. I have to look it up, but yes, someone did get STD. And you know what the best part is? He took the money for his STD compensation, just used it for his next movie, and he didn't get treated.
I'm curious if he got compensation. Anyways,
let's see what the interwebs has to say. Born in Germany, severe stutter as a child, permanent hearing loss. He's lost 2/3 of his hearing in his left ear. Doesn't say if he was compensated or not.
Okay, by the way, old school, just so we have it on record, the guy who did get STDs and was compensated is Marvin Van Peebles for the movie Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song in 1971.
There you go. I like it because it from once he shoots the guy, it goes into like kind of a dark ode to joy. It's like, I guess like now the criminals are there, so ode to joy is now evil. I kind of like how they transition that. Still doing ode to joy, by the way, but they kind of at least transition it a bit. And now at this point, so the movie turns into John McClane versus the Germans.
Well, not just the Germans. Don't forget, there's an Asian fella.
Yeah, they're not all Germans. It's just like it's an international group.
The Germans and the black guy.
No, there's also an Asian dude. You forget there's like a bunch of like different races in there. It's pretty cool.
A bunch of different Asian guys, not
but there's a lot of Germans. Races. It's predominantly German bad guys.
Yeah. So at that point, McClane actually uses his head a bit and trips the fire alarm. But unfortunately, because there's no cell phones, it just goes to the main number and the guy's like, nah, that's okay. And the guy's like, fuck. And then the fire guys just take off. So that fortunately does not work.
Before the guy sawed through all those wires, which I thought were electrical, were actually all just like phone wires. And that's why he was redirecting everything.
Yeah, but he got it just in before. Yeah.
I mean, if the bad guys don't succeed at cutting the phone wires, then where are they going to go from there?
John McClane kills the first German by using stairs. What the fuck?
Well, he had
him
in like a headlock and fell down the stairs.
Yeah, that's right.
Broke his neck. So, I mean, you know, on it, I don't think he meant to. Maybe he didn't mean to kill him. Maybe it's just self-preservation. But got dead German number one. So.
I do have a question though. With the whole when he actually writes with blood, that means he had to cut the guy too, right?
I would, or it's his own blood.
Yeah, I was wondering, is it his own blood or is it the German guy's blood?
I don't know.
I would think it's just his own blood.
Might have been a red marker. Who knows?
See, that's why I never caught that.
Yeah, because it was pretty well written.
So like, I never understood.
It's in blood. Wouldn't it be more like streaky?
Okay, so
they're in an office building. I mean, it's got to be a marker.
I thought it was blood. Okay, cool.
So first German dies, then hacker guy guesses the password, which he does pretty much an 80s Google translate of a Japanese word, and it's like the guy's name or something.
The password was actually Red Castle.
But that it was translated from one of the guy's names.
Yeah, something weird like that.
Yeah, but it's come on, fuck. You know, $6 billion, $600 million in bearer bonds, and like your password's your fucking name. Like, I'm sorry, you deserve to lose your money. So John McClane is reaching out on a CB radio from the top of the building to try and get their attention. And he's talking with the dumbest woman cop in the history of fucking police. Like, she hears gunshots on the line and no sells it. And like, I don't know.
I watched that scene. It's stupid. As a kid, I was like, whatever. But not watching it now, that's a dumb scene.
Like, we're fucking being killed by terrorists. And they're like, nah, this guy's full of shit. Fuck him. Like, no, that would never happen. She deserves to be fired or shot or whatever. She's a fucking moron. If you hear gunshots and you're like, man, no, and it turns it off. Fucking, that's the person that's dispatched. I'm sorry, but that whole city's in trouble. So they finally, they just like, okay, fuck it. Send one person just to make sure. And who do they send? They send Carl Winslow.
By the way, playing to me like the same role. No?
I'm telling you, I think that this is a precursor to
Family Matters.
Yeah, I believe
so too. Because, I mean,
this should be considered a prequel to Family Matters.
He's a cop. Family Matters too, right?
Does that mean Ghostbusters is a prequel to Die Hard?
Okay, but piece that together for me.
he plays the security guard in the jail because he's like, "All right, Ghostbusters, the mayor will see you now," or something like that.
So that was his first job. So then he goes as the security guard in New York.
Everything doesn't work out in New York. So he
goes to LA to become a cop.
Yeah. And then everything's not working there, and he finally meets Harriet, and they move to Chicago, and yeah.
Well, wait, why should we know? Because Harriet is pregnant in this movie, right?
Huh?
He says his wife's pregnant?
That's true.
Yeah?
Oh, that there you go. True.
Although, by the way, I'm wondering, is she? Because the Twinkies, he says, my wife's pregnant, and the guy's like, yeah. And, like, then, so the Twinkies are actually for him, not his wife. So is his wife pregnant, or is it just a lie?
Oh, he's...
Oh, no,
we have to discuss more of the movie, I think.
Does he have a wife? Okay, fine. Do we? Okay.
I think Kimmy's right. I think there's this timeline of fucking Carl Winslow here. I think we can actually make an article on this. I don't think anybody's pieced this together
before. You don't think... the internet's pretty vast, but okay, sure.
No, I don't think this has been done. I think Ghostbusters is a precursor to Die Hard, which is a precursor to Family Matters. No, hold on. What was he in before? No, it was Perfect Strangers. So it was,
what?
Ghostbusters is a precursor to Die Hard, which is a precursor to Perfect Strangers, which is a precursor to Family Matters. Look it up.
I'm doing so now. Perfect Strangers. The fuck? Wait. What's
6 Degrees of Carl Winslow?
Okay, wait. Who was in Perfect Strangers?
Wasn't he? Wasn't Harriet?
He is Carl Winslow. He's Carl Winslow in Perfect Strangers. That's where the character was born. I mean, he was only on a couple episodes.
So. Okay. So that makes sense. Yeah. So then he goes on Perfect Strangers, but it's the same character, clearly.
So because of all the problems that happened with the terrorists, he changes his name to Carl Winslow, moves to fucking Chicago.
Yeah. Meets the Perfect Strangers.
And then comes out with Family Matters. Die Hard and Ghostbusters are a fucking prequel. Yeah.
I think we're stretching here.
No, I don't think so.
Is he still Sergeant Al Powell in Die Hard 2? Is he? Is it McClane who just has his contact information?
Technically, it could be dated.
That's
earlier.
True. By the way, I believe it is because it seems like it's the year right after. Yes.
I think it still precurses it. So if we're looking at, Ghostbusters to Die Hard 2 to Perfect Strangers to Family
But we're
Matters.
Also missing Turner and Hooch in between here because he's all detective in Turner and Hooch as well in 89.
Okay, where is that?
that's 1989. That's around Perfect Strangers time.
Hold on. I think we need to do a little more research, but I think it works. I think it somehow fits together.
It's not that hard. It's just he's always the same freaking cop all the time.
It's 6 degrees of Carl Winslow. I think this works somehow. So then at that point, Willis has to draw from a shaft of an elevator using the strap of a gun to fall down or something. Apparently Carb said that they did it on Mythbusters and it didn't work out.
Not like that, but they did the myth where if you can hold on to a ledge with your fingertips, how long you'd survive. And it's like there's no way you could drop and hold on by your fingertips. And apparently, that scene as well, the stunt guy was only supposed to drop down, like, right below. But apparently the rigging screwed up, and he dropped down to that second elevator shaft.
But you know what? Doesn't Jet Li have a move where he can go from floor to floor to floor just with his fingertips? Not exit wounds. Krill to the grave.
Yeah.
So he did it. It works.
Well, you know what? We'll try it out. We'll drop you down an elevator shaft and see if you could hold on with your fingertips. All right, buddy?
Sure.
So then they dispatch the cop, Carl Winslow, the 6 degrees of Carl Winslow. And I don't know if you guys ever played Wolfenstein.
Schnell.
Okay, what?
Schnell.
Hey, by the way, one thing, you say Carl, but there's actually a terrorist called Carl. So, you know, we don't want to get confused here.
I'm sorry. Okay. The cop.
Sure.
Carl Winslow, the cop.
Reginald Vell Johnson. That's all.
Carl Winslow, right. But like, if you ever played Wolfenstein or seen The Bourne Identity, when they're like, Polizei, Schnell, Polizei. Right away, I'm thinking fucking Bourne Identity.
Schnell means what? Fast? What's it mean?
Yeah.
Means,
like run. Okay. Yeah, go. Wolfenstein like was all like, Schnell. But then he's just like, this is the worst perimeter check ever. He's just literally driving in circles in a cul-de-sac. He's like, it looks good, you know?
It's fine,
like,
whatever.
Like, what do you didn't check? All you did was check a little cul-de-sac and the fucking front entrance.
He's a cop. It's his last call of the night. He's on his way home to his pregnant wife. Like, he's going to give a shit.
To his alleged pregnant wife. We don't know.
And he's like, he was told, he's like, oh, just go check it out. We think we heard something.
So, but Bruce Willis or McClane, he sees the cop at the bottom there.
Yeah.
And he said, come on in. But why didn't he just get the cop's attention and throw the chair through the window at that point when he was outside?
No, he could have. I don't know. I don't know why he didn't. I think he was hoping.
He didn't, but he was just waiting for him to come in.
Yeah, he was.
And then fucking this guy who looks like Alberto Del Rio comes in and he fucking blows him in the dick. Shoots him in the dick.
Through the table.
Yeah, but the guy looks like Del Rio.
A little bit.
So then they go, Winslow comes in the building. He's like looking around. He literally walked 5 feet or whatever. He's like, fuck this. And as he walks outside, he goes in his car, a fucking Del Rio goes flying through the glass onto the car. So if McClane wanted to get his attention, he definitely got it at that point.
Yeah, well, I mean, even then, like the Del Rio guy, he's on the table. He's like, no, American cowboy, when you have a chance to shoot somebody, you should shoot. And then he just starts like shooting through the table. He's like, thanks, asshole.
Good advice, yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And at that point, fucking, okay, Winslow knows it's on. He calls the cavalry. That dispatch cunt's like, what's going on? He's like, I'm getting shot
now, goddammit, now. Over and over and over. Now, goddammit, now.
That's when we heard the first, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Yeah, but it's not done that shoots. Way.
Yeah, it was more like, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
But wait. Doesn't he?
Because he asks him who he is.
Yeah, he asks him who he is.
And he's like, just call me Roy Rogers.
The cowboy.
Right. Yeah.
And he's like, yeah. Oh, American cowboy, blah, blah, blah. He's like, oh, yeah, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Yeah, that's right.
So, but that's like one of the most iconic lines in cinema history. I think it's in the top 100 of...
But what I find interesting...
The line has been used by John McClane in all 5 movies and was voted number 96 of the 100 greatest movie lines ever in 2007.
You know what? But while it is uttered by John McClane in every movie, it's not... Like, at the end with Hans Gruber, it's not John McClane who says it.
No. Well, he says it halfway through the film.
Yeah, he says it now, right? This is when he says it.
Yeah.
But but not as a punchline, just as a, like, off-the-side joke.
Yeah, basically.
But what I'm trying to say is that...
How he's a cowboy.
That's right. However, when you start with the second one, and then the third one ends up being, like, at the end, when he kills the bad guy, he has to say the line. I find it interesting how it's in this first movie where he actually doesn't say the line when he kills the bad guy.
Well, I don't think they knew what
they
had.
No, they didn't know what they had. No, but it's also interesting that at the end, that is a punchline, but not uttered by him, uttered by Hans Gruber.
They do have a lot of one-liners in this.
Oh, but a ton. Yeah.
I'm wondering if, like, they had written it, and then Arnie read through it, and he's like, not enough one-liners, and then...
Yeah, fuck this.
Did you not see Commando? I was 1,000 one-liners in that.
You know what? This is. This needs more one-liners.
Where's the let out some steam, Bennett? Where's that?
All right, guys. Okay, by the way, we have to Commando next. Oh, well, that movie's amazing.
It's an option. Commando's one of them, I guess.
Oh, it's beautiful.
What else did you suggest?
I suggest pre-show? Toxic Avenger to change things up.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay, I don't know. Commando and Toxic Avenger are going to be the ones we vote on. So the cops then rush the building. Limo driver just finally realizes he's in the basement of a terrorist.
Yeah, giant teddy bear. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, well.
He's hanging out calling his fucking girl and stuff.
He was in the car. He had the hip-hop pumping super loud. You're not going to hear the gunshots. I mean, people outside didn't hear the gunshots. He didn't hear the gunshots from like 6 floors away. I mean, this is probably one of the best soundproofed buildings there is.
Yeah. So. I know, it's not a flaw to me.
But yeah, I do not want to know that guy's cell phone bill, whatever car phone bill. He was on there all
the time. Yeah, you're right. It's a car phone bill. Yeah, holy shit.
He was racking up those minutes. Did anybody see the Crunch Bar? Crunchy Bar?
I seen it.
Yeah, I forget what it was. Wasn't it the hostages or something?
That's what I thought.
But I saw a Crunchy Bar.
Well, because when the Asian guy's in the lobby getting ready to shoot the cops, he's got like...
That's right.
But we're still not even close to that part.
Oh, really? Because that's what, I see limo driver, basement, occupied building, Crunchy Bar, product placement.
There's also Hershey's in there. There's a couple in that box.
But here's my question. Is it actual product placement?
I'm wondering. I don't think that is.
I don't think it is.
That's just the lobby store.
It's kind of blatant, though. I mean, I was aware of it.
No, but it doesn't matter if you're aware. Because how can I say, there's a difference between them advertising it and them like using it for reality's sake. Like, I mean, there would be a cringe break. I mean, let's say you're going to a vending machine. You're not going to have random names. You're going to have those actual names.
Yeah, you could. Yeah. Well, don't they usually do that where they don't actually put real products? Unless they put money into it, you know? You have, like, fucking Joe Blow Bar or whatever.
No, Tarantino does it, but Tarantino doesn't do it. He does it because he doesn't want to advertise for somebody else. But I don't think he'd have to pay if you put a Crunchy Bar in his movies.
No, you don't have to pay, but I'm saying...
What I'm trying to say. Yeah, you don't have to pay.
But you could make money.
Yeah, you could make money, but they don't... It's not... Like, I mean, when you have, like, cars in the street, right? Guaranteed, okay, Michael Bay gets paid for every car that transforms, okay? That we know. However, a film, like in Die Hard, the person that, like, that owns whatever cars you see on the street, that are whatever Winslow's driving, or that the limousine company... Did they pay to actually have their car there? I don't think so.
Probably not, no. Why do Germans have to fucking scream everything?
Because they're Germans. Have you not heard a normal German talk?
No, but it's like everything. Every form of communication had to be an elevator.
Yeah, because they're Germans. Yeah.
Well, Hans Gruber was kind of low-key, but it's because he's not really German, I think. I like the fact when they tried this, the fucking cop, Robinson there, Dwayne. That guy was fucking funny. He was like, and he was like Ferris Bueller's, the fucking principal or whatever, I think, eh?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. He was funny because they're like fucking Keystone idiots, you know? Like, they're like, ah, fuck this, rush the building or whatever. Was it the FBI or was it them that rushed it?
Well, the FBI flew in on the helicopters.
Okay.
They told the cops to rush the building, I believe.
Okay. And then the fucking Germans are ready with a fucking bazooka and he takes out the RV or whatever with a bazooka. I thought that was a cool, like, the whole action sequence was really
good. Oh, that's an awesome sequence. I actually forgot it from, I don't know why I forget it from before. I guess because I don't remember as a kid the John McClane kills, but, like, that actual scene with the bazooka is phenomenal. Yeah, you're right. Pretty cool.
Even the back and forth with McClane and the police chief on the CB I thought was really funny, too. They used to tell him to fuck off and stuff.
Well, gritty New York detective going up against terrorists and first time ever in LA, I guess you're gonna have a shitty attitude towards other authority.
Oh wait, and so I can say it now. We're introduced finally to like the chief of LA police.
I think he's the chief.
Yeah, so he's the guy from the Breakfast Club. Yeah. He's the principal. Yeah, it's awesome. Love seeing him there.
Then you get the slow the heel turn from the fucking douchebag coke addict guy. Who actually, when I was watching, I was going to the car. I'm like, oh, he's gonna fucking rat on McLean and say his wife's
there. He's in on it. I think he's one of the bad guys.
Yeah, I thought he was in on it the whole time. Yeah.
But you know what gets me every time? Like, I just get annoyed is how he's talking to play on the phone, and then like he'll look at Gruber and go like,
Yeah.
He does it once, it's okay, but he does it way too much. I'm like, stop. It's
like 50 times.
Like, fuck, tell stop. Me,
he's asking to get shot.
He's a shyster salesman. That's his attitude.
It's like...
Coked out salesman from the 80s.
It's so stereotypical, it's douchebag.
It's caricature douchebag. Got it.
Okay, first I thought he was in on it, and he wasn't. Then I thought he'd rat out the wife, and he actually didn't, but he did give up the guy's name. But then John fucking he's like I don't know him, whatever, and he gets him shot and killed, which I think is fine. Nobody has sympathy for the guy.
There's none. He's a total fucking movie makes it really clear that there's no sympathy for this dude.
But I like the fact that like McClane is kind of a gray area where he doesn't care like if the guy gets killed.
Well, I mean, he tried to warn him too. He's like, don't tell Hans we're friends, you fucking prick. You know this guy's serious. He's gonna kill you. He's like, oh, don't worry about it, John. And then bam.
I like the Carl Winslow line, you better wake up and smell that, what you're shoveling.
I don't remember that line, but okay.
Like you said it to the police chief, better wake up and smell what you're shoveling. And then Gruber mentions fucking Liberté de Québec. I was like, what?
Well, like he said, he just read it in time.
Yeah, but I love that. You're right, he does say it. And by the way, I had watched this on TQS in French once. And I was like, wait, did they just put us in the French version for like, you know, Quebecers? Watching it in English, No, he really does have it. That's really interesting that he uses us there. Yeah.
Yeah, well, he mentions like several world terrorists because he's pretending to be a terrorist himself and say, okay, well, you need to let these guys go because he was trying to hide the fact that he was stealing money. So that was kind of cool. But the one thing, this fucking idiot police chief, he breaks the first rule. I'm not even a fucking negotiator or whatever. But the rule is you never say no to a fucking hostage taker, ever. You say, we'll look into it, we'll do it. You don't dismiss the guy's request. And right away, he's like, no, we're not doing that. I'm like, this guy's a fucking absolute asshole. And then on TV, they're mentioning Helsinki syndrome, which is, I'm like, Helsinki syndrome? Doesn't he mean fucking Stockholm syndrome? We looked it up later.
Joke. Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
But then we looked it up later in CARP. Give us your findings.
Oh, yeah, hold on.
Wait, there's a Helsinki syndrome?
Well, it's the same thing. It's they just said Helsinki.
They're both from the same area. They're both from the same country.
Yes. Yeah, so there we go. There is, strictly speaking, no such thing as Helsinki syndrome. The original term is Stockholm syndrome. So it was just the movie that they did it for. Basically, you know, Stockholm syndrome is some sort of emotional attachment between the kidnappers and kidnappees, which often lasts even after the incident. Helsinki syndrome has been used either accidentally or humorously to describe the same phenomenon. The first time it was kind of a publicly acknowledged as a gag was in Die Hard.
Okay, yeah. But it makes sense because the guy just is not as swift, so he's just confusing cities.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
He's, you know what that guy is? He's like your Fox News reporter, you know, on the, not on
yeah,
the
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, that's yeah. Right, that's right.
Like, you know, the loudmouth that they're putting on TV during a hostage situation.
And then McClane finds Gruber, but then they had a really cool back and forth scene with Rick, with Gruber pretending to have an American accent, and his name is Bill Clay, because he asked, well, what's your name, whatever, and then he looked on the ledger, and he actually got it right at one point, and then he gives Gruber a gun, so you figure, oh, fucking Gruber's going to cap him or whatever, but Willis, at the end of the day, outsmarted him because the gun was a bank.
By the way, one thing, I actually don't... Everybody says, oh my God, Rickman's so good in the scene because like he does this accent. But I really disagree with this. I don't know if it's part of the film, how he's supposed to exaggerate it, but I don't know. I'm not sold on his, you know, fearful American guy. Yeah, I'm really not.
Sounds like he has more of like a Texan accent when he's speaking.
It's weird. I'm not sold on it. And I'm not sold on his acting in there either. I mean, not his acting as an actor, but his acting within the film. You understand? Like Hans Gruber's acting. I'm not. I would be very suspicious if I was Bruce Willis, which obviously he is.
From what I've heard, when they actually meet as he pretends to be Bill Clay, that scene was completely unrehearsed.
Oh, it was? Okay.
Yeah. Director John McTiernan wanted to create a greater feeling spontaneity between Willis and Rickman for the movie's climax. So that's why he apparently that was completely unrehearsed.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah, well, Rickman isn't an accent guy, so, you know, he did the best he could, I guess.
No, he's a Shakespearean stage actor. He's coming from small...
Yeah, that's what he is. Yeah, that's right.
Small little TV roles in Europe to the big time with a completely unknown... I mean, who would have known if Bruce Willis would have become an action star from this at the time, right? So,
yep.
It's, you know, I'm sure Rickman took some liberties with some of his accents, but nonetheless... He's still like the Hans Gruber character is one of the most iconic bad guys ever. So
yeah, and you got the smart kind of villain. I thought it was cool. Then Ode to Joy comes back again when they open the vault and find their $600 million in bearer bonds. Fuck, that's a lot of money.
$650 million back in 1988.
Yeah, so imagine with inflation, over a billion for sure. Then it was a really cool scene where McClane's kids, the asshole reporter, goes on like and cons the maid with a horrible accent to let him in and like interview the kids on TV, which is ethically fucking so super wrong. But anyways, the mother sees him on TV. He catches that. He catches her looking on the TV and puts together that she's actually the wife, which I thought was a really cool scene, too.
Wait, but I found that hard to catch. How does he figure out that both...
Because they mentioned McClane's kid. He knows it's McClane in the building at that point.
Okay.
They mentioned the kids on TV, and then how she looked at the TV.
That's what it was?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. He read her facial expression.
Okay, I always... Okay, he just read her facial expression. All right.
It was very subtle, but it was because the guy's a smart fucking guy, this whole plan being the terrorist and that. He's a smart dude, how he's trying to outsmart McClane. And so I thought it really fit. I thought it was a really cool easing into the fact that, because it was obvious that at some point they were going to find out. So I thought that was a really cool thing because I originally thought it was going to be the douchebag that let it go. You got the fight scene between McClane and the German guy. I actually thought that was a really good, because you knew that it wasn't going to get too action-packed with Rickman in that.
It's like in many films of the 80s and early 90s, where you'd have, you know, against a Stallone, a Schwarzenegger, or a Van Damme, where if the villain was more of an intellectual, you'd need, like, a primary henchman, so you'd have that cool action fight. So you'd have, you know, both the intellectual bad guy and the giant brute, you know, monstrous henchman to have that cool fight versus the enemy. Because, you know, because the main hero is both smart and strong, so you need villains to fight him on both those fronts.
Yeah, well, the villain would always have to have a main henchman to physically back him up.
Physically back him up, that's right, yes. That's what works well in this movie.
The first two Batmans were the same thing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, of course. Oh, yeah.
Especially the second Batman.
That's it. But you know what? I watched what was it, the other day. It was like most one-sided fights. It's like Batman versus the Penguin. Like, but it was always... The point was never for him to fight the Penguin. That was never it. It's he has to, you know, uncover his scheme and try to figure it out and get out of it. That's it.
Then the FBI guys go in and they're saying, well, if we rush now, we're going to lose 25% of the casualties. And the guy's like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, fuck it. Yeah,
no, he's like, oh, 25%. I can live with that.
Yeah, what? Yeah, yeah. But by the way, there's a few funny, there's a hilarious scene in there. It's when he introduced himself as Agent Johnson and Johnson. First of all, we'll call Johnson. So, you know, for me, it's very funny.
Yeah.
But also, yeah. One's black, one's white. And he's like, no relation. Gee, really? Wow, I wouldn't have guessed.
That's a good line.
Those are really good lines.
Mother from another mother.
Yeah, but you know what? There's also another great line where they're in the helicopter. Because we might miss it if I don't talk about it now. There's another you know, very funny line with the fact that they're both called Johnson is the fact that there's a scene where I think it's the white one actually calls the higher up the bureau and starts giving him a list of like the people he wants, including the Quebec resistance people, Liberté. And he's like, it's Johnson. No, the other one. So to me, that's a very funny joke. It just keeps coming up. This guy in this predicament, the fact that he's put up with another guy called Johnson, his whole freaking life has to always refer to the fact that he's the other one or that he's this one. And to me, there's a very funny scene where he's during the helicopter. And I was watching this with my wife, by the way, who's Vietnamese, okay? And he's in the helicopter being like this badass, going like, man, this is freaking Saigon. And the black guy just can't relate because he's like, dude, I was like 10.
I was in grade school.
I was in grade school. It's like, I don't remember this freaking Saigon. And my wife was like, look at me, William, is this a joke about the Vietnam War? I'm like, yes, it is. I'm sorry if it's so like lighthearted in this case. But yeah, it's a Vietnam War joke.
It's the 80s. Who gives a shit?
Yeah, you know exactly. What? Who gives a
shit? Yeah.
Those two had good back and forth. McClane's taking a good beating. He's getting fucking, he's all cut up in his feet. That whole scene in the sink with the glass. Oh, that was graphic, man. That was tough to watch.
Yeah.
Even though I knew it was fake.
When I was a kid.
Go ahead, Kirk.
When I was a kid, that got me. I was like, oh, God. Because, you know, when you're a kid, you're not really explained. Back then, we were explained practical versus special effects and all that stuff. So I was just like, oh, God, he really hurt his feet. Oh, why would he keep, you know.
But you know what? That's the scene that comes up now in every article about comparing McClane and how the Die Hard franchise has changed. Because it shows how, unlike Stallone and Arnold, this was not a superhuman. This was just a man, right? And he wasn't, like, he won't go to Russia and, like, freaking destroy a helicopter single-handedly. You know what I mean? Which is, you know, what he does.
He's constantly getting his ass kicked in each movie.
Like in this, in this one, and the second one gets a bit intense. But in this one especially, he's really just a man. And the idea was that it's this, first of all, not a stellar New York cop. He's, by no means is he, like, this, like, hero awesome cop. He's just a random, normal cop going to L.A., being stuck in this. And it's this situation that brings out, you know, the best in him. And that's what this whole movie is about. That's how this movie is the best of the lot and how we'll always compare back to this movie because of that one scene where we realize that he, after all, is just a human and can get really, really hurt. Is there anybody there?
No. Well, I mean, I completely agree with you on that. Like, you know, you could tell he's human with the amount of ass kicking he takes each and every Die Hard film. So,
like, I'd say not in the last one.
No, I guess as well.
He's way too superhuman. Like I said, he just takes down that entire freaking...
Yeah, he gets his ass kicked a little bit.
Or then he uses, like, in the fourth one, he uses a car as a bullet for the helicopter, too. Like, it gets a bit superhuman.
I like that scene on the roof. It was fucking epic.
Which on the roof? The one where he's shooting with the machine gun?
There was two, right?
It's him.
I find that whole action sequence was really good.
And the thing with the fire hose, I've always like had that in my mind where if I were in a high rise building and it were on fire, where I would try and like grab as many fire hoses as I could. You know, if I know my options are burned to death or try something super ballsy and crazy with fire hoses, guess what I'm trying? And it's probably because of Die Hard. I've always thought of that. So
there you go. Yeah, and then limo driver finally takes out the geek. He fucking crashes into and punches it. He was the weakest punch in the history of fucking
punching.
What's
up with the black-on-black violence, man?
By the way, he's so happy when he does it. So happy. Like, he's giving himself, like a mental high five.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, I mean, like, McClane should be pulling glass out of his body, like, fucking 3 years later. It was just so much fucking glass got into him. It was crazy. Then the whole thing with Gruber, where he falls out the window, and he holds on to the wife, and then he fucking... I think he says that before he gets thrown out, right? What did you say before?
Yeah, of course, it's before, yeah.
Was it yippee-ki-yay? Yeah. Apparently, that look that Alan Rickman has, the Hans Gruber, his face of, like, terror, that's legit.
What do you mean?
They actually dropped out. It was the last shot of the film on the last day, which is very rare because they'll usually like film stuff like that before. They actually dropped him 40 feet and they didn't tell him that they were going to drop him that far. And he was super pissed about it after.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
There's a video on Uproxx about the Die Hard fall. It's not a long video. It's only a minute. But yeah, so director John McTiernan chose to drop Alan Rickman 40 feet 1 second before the actor expected to achieve a look of surprise. They used the first take for the film and managed to piss off Rickman in the process. They were very careful to make it the last shot of the film.
Oh, wow. That's kind of cool, though.
So.
Yeah, it was funny. Then he falls out and then fucking Dwayne there, the fucking police chief's like, I hope that's not a hostage. Yeah,
I know. The worst reaction ever. I hope that wasn't one of the hostages. Like, how are you a police chief awesome, in L.A. man. And have that kind of reaction to, like, during all this crazy shit going on?
Yeah, he's just a fucking Keystone Cop idiot. I love it. He was such a cookie-cutter character, but he was super entertaining. I enjoyed it. And so, yeah, that was pretty much the film in a nutshell. If you haven't seen Die Hard like me, I don't know why I haven't seen this. If you haven't seen it, you got to check it out, man. It still holds up, except for the whole cell phone thing. But the plot, the story, the action's great. I thought Willis did a great job. Rickman did a great job as the evil smart villain. The wife was way too old, but that's okay. I like the 6 Degrees of Carl Winslow. It's a precursor to Family Matters. That was cool.
Hey, about that. At a certain point, Winslow, because I said we'd wait for later. At a certain point, Winslow says, hey, man, all the guys are cheering for you. Which guys? There was nobody down there actually going, yeah, go John McClane. Winslow was his only fan the whole freaking time.
That's true. Everybody else was against
him. Yeah, is he like hallucinating? Because it's like, man, the guys are really rooting for you. There's nobody there. Is this guy alone?
Maybe the guys in the station were.
Are they? We don't know. How do we know that? There's no cell phones. It's not back and forth.
You got to take his word for it, man.
By the way, do you think he's alone? I don't even think he has a pregnant wife.
No, dude, it makes sense. If you fit it into the Family Matters timeline, that Harry, he's pregnant, she's pregnant with a kid. Yes, so she's there.
But the Twinkies are
I think I have something here.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just saying that to, like, you know, the pep talk before the big game type thing. You know, oh, we're all rooting for you. Go team.
Yeah, go team John McClane. So. Yeah, but I don't know. They're not. I think he's a lonely man. I think there's something at home waiting for him. I think he's got a few cats.
Well, I mean, he's a desk jockey at this point, right? Because he shot.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, you're right. Because he shot that kid.
No, but then he got over because he shot the terrorist.
Oh, he had to shoot the terrorist.
Oh, one thing I love, and we didn't mention that scene, but it's one of my favorite scenes. It's when Holly knows that John's alive. Because the terrorist comes back, like, really fucking pissed. He doesn't say Chanel, but he gets some random German lines.
Yeah.
He's really frustrated. And she's, like, all happy. He's like, well, because...
Yeah, because only John only can John piss off
piss off a man like that. I'm like, yeah, that's
a good crazy. Line. Yeah. Okay, what do you guys give it on 10, Carp?
Well, it's one of my top Christmas movies of all time, first of all. And Hans Gruber is one of the most iconic bad guys ever in cinema history. It's a 9 out of 10 for me, so...
Same here. 9 out of 10. Same thing.
Heavy set.
In all honesty, like, I half-ass watched the movie before the show, so I'm not a great rating-wise, much like almost every movie we come up with, I'm like, great, I haven't seen this movie, so I can't do a in-depth stuff, I can't wait till the summer when we do Ghostbusters, because I'm going to have a lot to talk about that movie, but did agree with the whole thing, like, there's a lot of it, from what I was paying attention to, like, really held up, it's just you would get those obvious 80s technology stuff where you just, like, you know, yeah, we're in the state. This is like just sitting there telling everything about the limo, and you just kind of think, yeah, I can get all that at the junkyard right now, kind of thing. But you gotta expect that for 80s movies. But from what I did pay attention to, 8 out of 10, it's still the quintessential action movie.
Will?
Oh, I thought I gave my it's 9 out of 10. Like Carp, like I absolutely love this movie. The one part I would have liked to get a bit more was there's a scene where he drops down a bomb that shatters the glass of, like, the bottom building and takes out two terrorists. That I'm surprised the building didn't fall entirely with it. That's the one scene that kind of takes me out of it. Aside from that,
but probably budgetary.
Yeah, I guess everything else. No, but it's also weird. I don't know. I would have taken care of it, like, a different way. I would have, gone down. I don't know. Who knows? But, definitely a 9 out of 10, maybe between 9 and 9.5. I'm not sure. But definitely up there for me.
Yeah, and I give it a 9 as well. Very, very solid 80s action movie. Definitely stands up. test the time, and I'm glad I finally got to watch it.
Yeah.
All right.
I remember when you're like, this is the first time I ever watched it. I'm like, you had a very restricted childhood.
Yeah. There you go. All right. It's good to feedback and get out of here.
You never go ass to mouth.
You've never gone ass to mouth.
You never go ass to mouth.
I've never gone ass to mouth.
Only two tweets this week. First one's actually Heavyset, who tweeted. And if you guys haven't seen this, you definitely have to check it out on YouTube. It's a punch out. Well, it's Rocky IV using sound effects from the original punch out. It's fucking hilarious. And it's just spot on, too. Like, the guy really took his time and did it. If you haven't checked it out, go on YouTube, check out Rocky IV Punch Out Mix. It is super fucking funny. Double A, I did not realize Gremlin was an African-American comedy classic. He says that because I said this week we take a look back at the 1984 black comedy classic. So, double A, Andy Anderson humor. Yeah. Boo. Andy Anderson humor for you. And that's it. Keep, don't be shy. Send us some meals. Ship me some meals.
Would you mind? I wouldn't mind. Ship some meals, guys.
Yeah, there you go. Send us some emails and tweets. I know we haven't been on in a while, but now it's been 4 or 5 weeks. We've been regular. So, don't be shy. Get back to us. All right. So, plugs, closing thoughts. We'll start with Mr. Heavyset.
I really have nothing to plug. I haven't been doing any podcasts lately. You know, nothing with NFL Easy Picks, which when this airs, you know, we'll have the Super Bowl coming up. Then there's, you know, I've really done Anything Goes or Wrestlecast, or maybe even did a guest spot as hosting on the AllWrestling.com Week in Review. Nothing like that.
Doing absolutely nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
Will, plugs, final thoughts.
Cybertron.com, SEI, Bertron.com. That's right. I just put in a top 5 list of the top 5 best helicopter transformers ever. So come check it out.
Carp, let's give your final thoughts and plugs.
You can always catch me on Twitter with Killer Carpe Diem. Hopefully, eventually, Mr. Old School will finally release our last episode of All Beer Inside.
Working on it.
And maybe we can possibly start recording it on a slightly more regular basis. Who knows? As always, StableWars.com. Always looking for new members. The new season, which will go from, I believe, next mid-February till WrestleMania, will be up and running very soon. There's constantly games going on, so come check us out. And the DVD supply is running low. Soon we'll be giving away gift certificates to WWE.com and HighSpots.com and all those websites. So come on over to Stable Wars and try and win yourself a prize.
All right, awesome. So for Carp, Heavyset, and Will, this is Old School saying thank you very much for listening.
This holiday season, revisit the greatest Christmas movie ever made. Yeah, you heard me. It's a Wonderful Life. Die Hard. Kick off your shoes and join the party for a movie filled with amazing action, great heroes, fantastic villains, hilarious comedy, suspense, romance, excellent stunt work, a rich supporting cast, and awesome one-liners.
Welcome to the party, pal!
What, you thought we were gonna crap on Die Hard? The guy's tank top is in the Smithsonian, for crying out loud. This movie is freaking perfect. In a decade where every action hero looks like an unstoppable roid monster, no one kicks more ass than the guy from Moonlighting who looks like your dad, John McClane.
How you doing?
He's a New York cop out of his element in Los Angeles.
Hey, Merry Christmas!
With no one to talk to but himself.
Come out to the coast, we'll get together, have a few laughs.
Strap in as McClane takes on a team of well-dressed, vaguely European terrorists, played by actors who didn't speak German, but the director had them try their best anyway.
She's Stimfenster. Shoot the glass.
Led by Hans Gruber, one of the greatest movie villains of all time.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Which is even cooler when it's his very first movie. Well, seriously? Way to hit the ground running, Rickman. But McClane's not alone. Meet Reginald Val Johnson, after he was the cop in Ghostbusters. But before he was the cop in Family Matters, he was the cop in Die Hard. He may not have the best diet or the best judgment.
I shot a kid.
But he's the best there is when it comes to moral support.
You just watch your ass and you'll make it out of there, you hear me?
He is alone, tired, and he hasn't seen diddly squat from anybody down here.
Hey, look, I love you.
Climb aboard for an adrenaline-fueled thrill rush of the 80s stuff you crave, like indoor smoking.
You smoke?
Carry-on guns. Japanese businessmen.
Pearl Harbor didn't work out, so we got you with tape decks.
Cocaine. Pregnant drinking.
Do you think that baby can handle a little sip? That baby's awesome. Ready to tend bar.
Making fun of touchscreens.
Cute toy.
It's super like I've
cool
seen,
limousine.
I swear to God, I did not play this before the fucking... We're meant to mention everything we talked. I swear to God, I didn't see this before.
And more cocaine.
Whoa!
Best decade ever. Lace up for a movie full of nonstop foot stuff.
Make fists with your toes.
Fists with your toes.
That is either a foot fetish's wet dream or their worst nightmare. Or a different, even weirder Tarantino-level foot fetish's dream. We're not here to judge. So experience the original masterpiece that inspired countless knockoffs like Die Hard on a bus, Die Hard in a tunnel, Die Hard on a mountain, Die Hard in the White House, Die Hard in the White House 2, Die Hard in a mall, Die Hard on a boat, Die Hard on this other boat, Die Hard in a rink, Die Hard on a train, Die Hard in a plane, Die Hard in another plane, Die Hard in the President's plane, Die Hard in a plane with snakes, and Die Hard but awful.
It's a 2-year contract on that phone.
Starring Bruce Willis when he still cared, Hans Gruber, Wax Dolph Lundgren, Carl of Duty, Cocaine's a hell of a drug, 80s authority figure, This Man Has No Dick, Types Like Your Grandma, and Uber Black. What? That's the limo one. It's not racist. Die Hard in a Building. It's nice to know this is what Europeans think we sound like.
Please, God, no, you're one of them, aren't you? You're one of them.